Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back to another episode. Welcome to Sunday. I hope you're having a great weekend. Today, we're going to talk about something that you might miss, you might skim over if I don't bring it to your attention. And there's a deep lesson, something that's valuable and important. Something that if you stick around towards the end, you're going to be glad you came. What am I talking about? Well, today I'm going to talk about the flu and contemplation. The flu and contemplation. And you might wonder, what do those two have in common? What are these two things doing together? Well, you know what that feeling you get when you are starting to get sick? You know, you're going along doing your life, and then all of a sudden it just hits you like a truck. Your body just feels completely empty. You're tired, you're achy. You know that you are in for some suffering. What's happening though below the surface when that happens is our white blood cells are releasing what's called cytokines, and those upregulate the immune system, and they kill all the invading bugs and flu and everything else that's in our bodies that are breaking us down. They're there to break us up, if there's such a thing. The result is inflammation, and that's what's making you feel like crap. Your body is already in major attack mode. You just started feeling bad, but your body has been ramping up for a long time. In other words, you've been sick longer than you've realized. And I know what you do. You do what I do. We load up on vitamin C and our potions and silver solution and whatever else you got in the medicine cabinet. And then you go about your day trying to just do your best and keep on going. But every now and then we get one of these colds or flu or something, and we can't. We just realize that this is a very sobering moment. And it's the moment that we acknowledge that we're really sick. It's like, man, this one isn't going away. It's that moment when you throw in the towel. You just clear your schedule and you just start heading home. You're basically done. You quit. Right? You're not going to try and fight this and live your life as if it's not going on. It's really impacting your life. You know, and in that moment, and that's the important thing I wanted to draw our attention to, is that in this moment, our mind-body connection has broke down. Up until then, your body simply does whatever your mind tells it to. You say, pick that thing up, you pick it up, right? You say, put it in your mouth, you put it in your mouth. You say, walk over there, whatever it is. Your body just listens. But this moment of being sick is a moment where it all kind of breaks down. And your body is saying, hey, I'm not going to keep up with you anymore. It's no longer compliant to the wishes of our mind. And this is what ushers in a sobriety. And I call it sobriety, but you could probably call it awareness if you're paying attention to what's going on just below the surface. Every single thing that was so important suddenly lessens in its importance. That meeting, that thing you're going to do, that errand you were going to run, it can wait, right? And, you know, with a cold, we rearrange our day's priorities, right? But if you are getting a terminal illness, you're going to be rearranging your life's priorities, aren't you? Because with getting a cold and you hit that sudden awareness that I'm really sick and I have to make some changes, that's just a microcosm of what happens to those who are diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. So you get a cold and you clear your day's schedule and you get cancer and you start rearranging your life. But both of those are important moments for us. And I say they're sobering moments because if we're aware, they're going to illuminate something for us. And I'm asking you to not skim over this moment, especially if you come to it this flu season, right? If you catch the flu bug, don't skim over this moment, okay? And I'm going to help kind of bring a parallel here that will help you go deeper, that'll help you find something deeply spiritual and hopefully helpful to you. You see, when our bodies are diminished, it ushers in a type of suffering. And that type of suffering can be really healthy for our soul. See, acquiescing to our body's call for attention, it tortures our ego. It just hurts our overinflated self-image, right? We have this idea that we can just keep going on and on and on. We're not going to let a cold get us down. You know those people. They work through every cold they've ever had. Some say it's because they have to, and maybe they do. But there's something of the ego in there. There's something about the way they view their importance in the world. And so much of it is overinflated. It's really not that important. And see, nothing is more spiritual than lowering our flag of self-importance. And sickness has the power to force the issue. Right? Sickness has the power to get you off your high horse, even if it's just for a little bit. There's something about this moment where you're really starting to feel it, feel bad. And you're just like, oh, and you have to let go of your schedule. You have to let go of certain things. And I know there are other things that are really, really important. And you try and work around it, but sometimes you just have to let it go. And see, suffering opens up questions that are not open when we're in our gangbuster way. Questions like, you know, I'm exhausted. Is all the effort really worth it? Are you going to ask yourself if the effort is really worth it when you're just running a mile a minute? No, you're caught up in all the effort and all the output. You might ask, what is my life anyway? Right? When you pull back from your life, you can actually observe it a little bit more of it anyway. You might ask, who am I if I can no longer do this work? What matters most right now? You see, the cold, the flu, or a disease, whatever it is, whatever kind of suffering it is, that's the spiritual moment. Asking these kinds of questions is the soul developing type of question. And these are just always placed on the back burner while our lives are distracted in our frenzied effort and output. And I mean frenzied because we live in a world where we don't stop. It is go, 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 go. Do you realize that 95% of our effort today is spent maintaining just what we had yesterday? 95% of your effort goes into just making another day just like the one you had yesterday. Very little goes into making a better day or a new day or anything else. You know, and sickness opens up that 5%. Sickness and suffering have a way of humbling us, pulling us back, slowing us down, helping us to go a bit deeper, so that we don't just skim over our life. If you never got sick, you never got run down or tired, you would literally work and miss so much. You see, sickness is a true form of suffering. It makes us lowly. It forces upon us humility. It can be truly beautiful and inspiring if it reveals to us that our ailment is not the sickest part of our life. Yeah, you thought the flu was the thing that made you the sickest. It's not. You see, in 25 years or more of pastoring and coaching and counseling, I can tell you this. Pride is the thing that makes us really sick. Pride makes us so sick that we can't or won't even acknowledge that it's our deeper sickness. See, we puff ourselves up. We get all highly offended. We overappraise ourselves as we take credit for the contributions of others. We cut others off in traffic because our agenda and our destination is so much more important than everybody else's. We hide our weaknesses. We don't want to get caught or called out. We don't take pleasure. We don't take pause. We take pleasure, when people are gossiping instead of taking a pause and saying, whoa, why are we diminishing those people over there? Why are they so different than us? Why have we turned our enemies into these people that are completely other than us? You see, we think in a prideful way that we are thriving because we're differentiating ourselves. And I know there are businesses and people who work so hard to differentiate, to be unique, to stand out. And I understand that part, and I understand the importance of it in some ways. When I say differentiation, I'm talking at a deeper level. Pride makes us feel better by differentiation. Be careful of that, because that is the sickest part of you, just like it's the sickest part of me. So what will it take to wake us up? I mean, if our pride and our pseudo-self has become a big cover-up job that has become our life, what's gonna wake us up from the pseudo-life that we're creating out of our ego and our pseudo-self? You see, I think it's going to require something severe to wake us up. And suffering is severe. And in this sense, suffering is also benevolent because it does wake us up. Sometimes it's lasting, though. Sometimes suffering isn't going away. It becomes a companion, so that you're not alone. It's like when the cytokines kick in, the gig is up. When suffering hits you, the gig is up. Sorry, pseudo-self, suffering has shown up. But there is another way. There's another way to get at this without suffering. And I'm not saying that this other way will prevent suffering. It certainly cannot prevent suffering. I don't know what can. But what it can do is transform suffering. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about contemplation. Now, if you think contemplation is just thinking really hard or turning on your brain and activating your thinker or your figure outer or whatever else part of your brain it is, then we are not talking about the same thing. Contemplation is a spiritual practice. It's very similar to meditation. It's a form of prayer or divine union, and it allows us to recognize that we are not what we think we are. Now, if you're familiar with transcendental meditation, then contemplation is not too unlike that. It just has a different kind of aim. It's not just about getting below your mind. It's about learning how to see your thoughts, because obviously, just like in transcendental meditation, when you can see your thoughts and observe your thoughts, you know that they're not yours. But it's to get you to another place. You see, the untrained mind, what the Bible calls cardia or heart, is, as Henry Scudder describes, it's a court jester blowing a feather in the presence of a king, right? The untrained mind just goofs around all the time. It cannot sit still. It struggles to sit still within the present moment. You see, the untrained mind loves to be preoccupied with the past and the future. It won't sit still until we learn how to do it. Contemplation, just like meditation, is the spiritual practice of learning how to quiet your mind. It's a process of learning how to be, right? Not strategizing and thinking, you know, and it's a very imperfect practice. Contemplation is simply being what we are, being right here, being right now. It is what is. It's not defending, it's not apologizing, it's not strategizing or planning or worrying about something. You notice when you learn this practice that your brain goes on to everything in the past that it's scared is going to catch up to it. Anything that's going to hurt that pseudo self, that ego. It worries about all the things that are going to happen or that are in the future yet to come. It strategizes and plans to try and come up with an alternative reality than the one that we have. And some of that is good and necessary. And I'm not diminishing the whole process. I'm helping you see that there's something in this present moment that we skim over all the time. And an untrained mind can hardly stand for a second. So there's no way when you're actually trying, since you can't do it when you're trying, there's no way you're going to do it while you live. You're going to live your whole life in the future or in the past, running to something or from something, and you're going to miss your very life. You see, this is just an exercise of learning how to be here now, in the present, in the presence. It's accepting the sickness that won't acknowledge it's sick. You see, in the present moment, God ceases to be a vending machine that bears countless requests from us. God is the very life-sustaining breath that gives and is our being. Contemplation is accessing the ground of all being by discovering it's not up there, it's not out there, it's not over there, it's not distinctly other, it's only here, it's only right now. It's not even an it. The subject and object actually dissolve into this is, or shall we say, I am. The I-thou relationship breaks down in contemplation, in meditation. I know many of you have experienced this. And it's a very fragile, messy practice. Nobody does this perfectly. We start like trying to ride a bike, you know, we can hardly even keep it upright. But eventually we can work our way down the path and then the trail and then some jumps and then further and further. But it opens up the discovery of how our proud pseudo self just loudly parades around, distracting and feeding itself like the selfish toddler that it is. And at first we think it's us, but then we learn it's the sickness that's set in. You see, divine union starves the pseudo-self. Divine union leaves only the authentic, what the Bible calls perfect in Matthew 5:48, the perfect self. That's the one that's transparent. It's transparently found in God. You see, folks, when it comes to spirituality, we've kind of been distracted. We've been set off course. We've been told that the goal of spirituality is to get us to heaven, and that you can get to heaven by doing good, right? Some say if you can't do good and you have to rely on the good works of Jesus and trust in those, but then they make it all about your choice. You have to pick Jesus' team, so that's another good work that you have to do. See, we've been told that the goal is to get to heaven one day. Get out of this horrible, terrible world that's going to hell in a handbasket, that's evil and dirty and polluted and wrong and sinful and bad. But you know, folks, that's not true. The goal is not to get to heaven one day by doing good or doing a good or making the right choice or picking a right team. The goal is to live out of the heaven, or shall I say divine union, that's experienced in each moment. The goal isn't to get to heaven. The goal is to live out of heaven. Contemplation helps us do that. And sickness can help us see it. You see, our world places very little value on spiritual practice. Half of the world probably doesn't even understand what divine union really is. And so perhaps the love of God has so purposed suffering as an alternative portal, right? Can you see it? Can you see that suffering ensures we cannot go through life and miss God? May we all be quieted by our suffering. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.